Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure. Having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are his. It's been 46 years. Not 47, it's been 46. I remember when it was. The first time that verse ever caught my attention. I'd been taught all of my life that my prospect of heaven was based on my faith, based on what I knew. And I knew that a lot of us were going to become senile before we left this old world, and we wouldn't know who we were, much less who the Savior was. And I tell you, that thought scared the living daylights out of me. Until one day, some 46 years ago, I noticed that verse and discovered the foundation was not what I know, but what God knows. I tell you, you couldn't get within speaking distance of me, but what I wanted to know, had you heard about that? Pardon me, Brother J.C., for hitchhiking. I don't often hitchhike, but you brought back some very pleasant memories from the time when that verse first caught my attention. First Peter chapter 3, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. Be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you. It was a long time after I noticed that verse before I noticed that word asketh. For a long time after I first discovered that salvation is by grace, you didn't have to ask. All you had to do was get close enough for me to crank up a conversation, and I wanted to know, had you heard? Have you heard about predestination? Have you heard about election? Particular redemption? To me, that was this morning's headlines. And there might be somebody that hadn't seen the headlines and I wanted to be the first to tell it. After a while, I discovered that it didn't do a whole lot of good to tell if they didn't ask. But if they gave me the slightest indication they might listen, I'd still wanted to talk. Still am. I'll talk as long as anybody will listen. I'll talk as long as they'll stand there and be courteous and pretend that they're listening. I've noticed that sometimes people pretend to listen. They'll look you in the eye and don't hear a word you're saying. But the apostle says to be ready. Be ready to give an answer to every man that asketh you of the reason of the hope that is in you. But he does say to do it with meekness and fear. Paul said something of the same thing. He said, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. We should be ready to give an answer. Every now and then, somebody asks you about your religious persuasion. And if you tell them that you're a primitive Baptist, that's going to generate another question. They want to know, well, now, what's the difference between primitive Baptists and All these other Baptists, there are all kinds of other Baptists. I've heard of all those. Never heard of a primitive Baptist. What's a primitive Baptist? Well, I've noticed that generally when a person asks that, he doesn't really want an hour-long lecture. We like our answers to be fairly short and to the point. And I've come to the conclusion that when somebody asks you, what's the difference between primitive Baptists and other Baptists, that it's not absolutely necessary to offend him. You know, that's not one of the prerequisites. Just because he asks, you're not somehow obligated to offend him with your answer. It's all right to give him an answer that he will accept. Now, I'm not talking about compromising. Oh, don't compromise for a minute. You can stand firmly upon these fundamental principles without being mean in the way that you respond to him. But you know, I've noticed that sometimes we have already reached the conclusion that no matter what I tell him, he's not going to accept it. And sometimes we put predestination or limited atonement like a chip on our shoulder and just dare him to knock it off. Go ahead, tell me you don't believe in predestination. I got 15 verses to prove that you don't know what you're talking about, and I'm right and you're wrong. And if you're as bright as I am, you'd know that that I'm brighter than you are. Now, that's not really necessary to do it that way. Now, generally, when somebody asks you, what's the difference between primitive Baptists and other Baptists? What's the first thing you usually point to? Well, we talk about election. We talk about predestination. We talk about how God made a choice of people before worlds were, and that God has all the power there is, and he's going to have every last one of them with him in heaven. Now, that's right. And we need to tell them that if they're willing to listen. We must not compromise. But do you think, really, if you're trying to teach him, do you think that's where you really need to start? Let me ask you. If you have a little boy that's 6 years old and he's just starting out in the first grade and he comes in from school that first evening and you ask him, son, what did you study in school today? Well, the teacher talked to something about something called algebra. Well, what did he tell you about algebra? I don't know. Well, didn't he say anything about the times tables? And the little boy says, well, yes, I asked him about the times tables. I'd heard about times tables, and I had heard I was going to have to learn the times tables. So I said, teach, how about the times table? And the teacher told me, well, we'll get to that. You'll have some basic arithmetic all along. You'll pick that up as you go along. But you're going to have algebra before you get out of high school. So you might as well get ready and start right now. So buckle down. Just quit whining. We'll get to the times tables after a while. We've got to get into these quadratic equations and all that. That's not the best way, I think, to go about it. Do you? I think really you ought to teach him addition and subtraction and multiply and divide before you get into the algebra, don't you think? Now, if you try to teach that kid algebra before you teach him arithmetic, you're not going to make much progress. And there's some other things that a person's got to understand about this subject before you get to this other. He's just going to reject everything you say out of hand. Okay, preacher, you're so smart in the mouth about it. Where do you think I need to start? Well, I think the best place to start, if anybody asks you, what are you Primitive Baptists all about? I believe the best place to start is where the Bible starts. Well, where does the Bible start? Go to the first verse. In the beginning, God. I believe if they want to know what the difference is, the best place to start is start talking about the nature and attributes of God. And if they can ever get straight on the nature and attributes of God, then the rest of it will fall in place. And if they don't get it straight about the nature and attributes of God, you're wasting your time to talk about all this other. So if they want to know what's the difference, well, we believe first off that God is almighty. Now you can say omnipotent if you want to, and that's a good Bible word. It's in there at least once anyway in the Revelation, but I like all powerful better. Because not everybody I talk to knows what omnipotent is, but they all know what all powerful means. And I'm kind of the persuasion that you ought never to use any word if there is another word that is simpler and more in common use than that word is. You know, God didn't call us to impress anybody anyway. He didn't call us preachers to impress anybody. He called us to feed sheep. You know, one of the highest compliments I feel that I ever get paid is for somebody to say, Brother Hunt, I appreciate that. That was simple. And I can't think of much of anything I appreciate more then when I go away on a trip like this and folks come around and shake hands, there'll be a little fellow 7 or 8 years old come through the line and say, Brother Preacher, I enjoyed what you said. I could understand what you're talking about. You know, I believe that the gospel is a simple message. I believe that the best rule to go by, you know, we don't need a different message for the old folks and from the message we have for the young folks. I believe the best approach is to preach so that little fellas can understand it and hope the old folks can keep up. But I believe the best place to start is to explain that we believe that God is all powerful. He has all the power there is. He can do anything he wants to do. He never has failed at anything he ever intended to do. Everything he ever started to do, he succeeded in it. He's never failed. And then let them explain to you that God's not near as powerful as you say he is. I remember what several years ago I was passing a denominational church there near home. And on the bulletin out in front of the church, the pastor had posted the subject of his sermon for next Sunday morning. And according to the announcement, next Sunday morning, he was going to preach on a discouraged Christ. I thought I sure would like to provide that preacher with a good proof text for him to preach from. You all know which text I'd give him, don't you? Isaiah said, he shall not fail, nor be discouraged till he have set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law. Amen. There's another proof text that goes with that too, isn't there? Paul said something about if somebody comes among you and preaches another Christ, that was the one that was discouraged. It's not the Christ of this Bible, do you see? So if somebody wants to know what's the difference between you Primitive Baptists and others, we need first to nail down this fact that God's got all the power there is. He does whatever he chooses to do. He's never failed at anything he started to do. He's always succeeded in everything. And then let them explain that God doesn't have that much power. You know, in the old days, when most battles were fought on the ground, It was the objective of every officer in charge, if he could, to, before the battle, gain the high ground. There was an advantage, very simple advantage. If you're on top of the hill, it's easier to lob cannonballs down into the valley than it is if you're down in the valley to shoot cannonballs up on top of the hill. You might even overshoot the hill altogether. So it was very important to gain the high ground. Still is, except nowadays the high ground is airplanes and missiles and so on. So the best thing to do, you know, is to gain the high ground to start with. And if you start out and you are bragging on God and they're diminishing God, you've already got the high ground, do you see? I think it's a good idea to explain that we believe that God is all wise, knows everything there is to be known. I remember one of the very first Primitive Baptist services I ever attended. Elder Lloyd Parker. Don't know if any of you know him. Some of you may know his widow. She still attends Blue Ridge Church down in Chatsworth, Sister Dorothy Parker. This is back when Brother Lloyd was still living. Anyway, I remember he stood up in that meeting. It's been over 40 years ago now. And he said, God never has learned anything. Had a strange ring to start with. Until he said, God never has forgotten anything. God has always known everything. It's been over 40 years since he came over that expression. Now I have an idea that as long as I still have my right mind about me, I'll remember that good brother making that very simple statement. God never has learned anything. Never has forgotten anything. Always known everything. You know, astronomers boggle our minds talking about the vastness of the universe. How many stars there are off out there in the universe? I don't doubt that the universe is every bit as big as they say it is. I think it's probably bigger than that. But every star out there, God knows it and can call it by name. Physicists head in the other direction. And they talk about how many millions and millions and millions of atoms of oxygen and hydrogen there are in a single drop of water. I have an idea it's probably that way. I never did see an atom, but I couldn't disprove it. I figure they're probably right. There's not an atom of oxygen in that glass of water but that God can identify it and distinguish it from the one next to it. And if there are 8 electrons in orbit around the nucleus of every oxygen atom, I learned that in general science. If there are 8 electrons in orbit around the nucleus of every oxygen atom, God knows every one of those electrons. And he knows where it is in its orbit around that tiny little atom. Somebody says, is it necessary for God to know all that? It is if he's all wise. Besides, it's his job to keep it spinning, do you see? You know, we talk about physical law. The physical law that upholds this universe. It appears to me that physical law is simply God's usual way of running the universe. Now, you may have a better definition than that, but that definition satisfies me. If there's a grain of sand on the seashore, God knows every grain of sand that's out there. then let them explain to you that God's not near as bright as you say he is. You see, you've got the high ground. I feel a lot better with the high ground than I do with them up on the hill shooting down at me, don't you? Start out by explaining that God is immutable, that he doesn't change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. His love doesn't change. His love is as it's always been. It wouldn't hurt to explain that your love for your children is only a faint reflection of the unchangeable love God has for his children. Now, my children are just like anybody else's children. Most of the time they did right, and some of the times they didn't do near as well as they should have done. You know, I've always heard that preachers have the meanest kids in the community. That's not right. That's flat not right. You see, really what happens is that people expect the preacher's kids to be little preachers. And they're not. They're probably about like the preacher was when the preacher was their age, do you see? Really. But anyway, my kids have not always pleased me. I'm proud of those kids. I could stand up here and I could just bore you to death talking about what fine children I have. But they are a long way from perfect. Kind of like their daddy. But anyway, as upset as I have been with those children on a few occasions, it was on the occasions when I was the most upset that I was the most fully aware that there was nothing that he or she had done or could do that would make me quit loving them. I was more aware of the unconditional nature of that love at that time than I ever was at any other time. It might be a good idea to explain that God is immutable. His love is immutable, doesn't change. I was in conversation with a man on the job a few years ago. After a while, the subject came round to religion. That happens generally with me after a while. And he was not a religious person, but he was one of the nicest people you ever worked with. And he was the sort of person that if everybody on the job was the way he was, it would just make it a lot more pleasant place to work. And he was trying to carry his end of the conversation. Really didn't know what he believed, but he wanted to be part of the conversation. And he said, Harold, do you believe in that doctrine, once saved, always saved? I said, well, yes, that's exactly what I believe. He said, well, I don't believe it. Really? You don't? I said, let me ask you something. Now, my wife and I have four children. He and his wife had four children, about the same age as our children. He and I were about the same age. But anyway, I said, suppose that one of your children were to wind up in the flames of eternal damnation. Now I said, suppose that there's no question that he deserves to be there, but that's where he is. Now you have the power that you could get him out if you want to. Or because he deserves to be there, you could just leave him right where he is. I said, now you don't have to answer me today. Think about it a few days and you can get back to me. I said, now considering that he deserves to be there, would you leave him there? Or would you, because you have it in your power to get him out, would you get him back out again? He said, you dummy, you know I don't have to think about that. If it's in my power to get him out, he says, it doesn't matter if he does deserve to be there. I'm going to get him out. I said, you believe in once saved, always saved. You just didn't know it. I said, that's all we insist on. God's love for his children is an unchangeable love. And if one of his children ever wound up in that place, God would take that place apart to get his child out of there. I think it's a good idea to start out where the Bible starts. Start out talking about God. Talk about the nature and attributes of God. And if he can accept that, then go ahead and move to the algebra course, to the next level, and so on. But even then, you can have the high ground. You don't have to give the other fellow the high ground if you don't want to. Back about about a month ago, 6 weeks maybe, I was on my way to a meeting in Arkansas, somewhere the other side of Memphis. I pulled into a McDonald's where there was better light so I could get out the Atlas. I was trying to see if there was an easier way to get to El Dorado, Arkansas. There's not. If you want to go to El Dorado, Arkansas, you got to go to Little Rock to start. But anyway, I went in and sat down at the booth there and got out this big Atlas, and there was a nice-looking older couple about my age in the next booth. And I kind of got the impression when I sat down that it was probably the local pastor and his wife. There's just something about him. I thought that it's probably a preacher. And he saw I looked bewildered, and he struck up a conversation and asked me where I was from and where I was headed and what I was up to. And I told him, he was ready for the conversation. He asked. And we had a very good conversation. Now, we didn't agree, but I can say this. It was a very good conversation. And if I believed the doctrines that his people believe, I'd like to have him for my pastor. I mean, he was just as nice a fellow as you'd ever care to talk to. And he wasn't trying to be disagreeable, but he did want to carry on the conversation. You know, he had a primitive Baptist preacher sitting there within earshot of him. And he said, you're the people that believe. And then he mentioned something about fatalism. And I said, no, we don't believe that. There are some folks that carry our name that do, and they broke away from us. And some among our own membership have something of that idea. But by and large, that's not what our people believe. And we talked a little while longer, and he said, now, aren't you the people that believe that God predestinated some people to heaven and predestinated some people to hell? And I said, no, we don't believe that either. We believe that God predestinated some people to heaven, but we don't believe that he predestinated people to hell. They go there not because of the sovereignty of God, but because of sin. We talked a little while longer, and I said, well, now, let me ask you. I said, can I get it straight about what you folks believe? And I said, now, do you people believe that a person comes into this world with a choice to make? And it's up to him whether he hears the gospel and believes it, whether he repents of sin and turns from it. And if he does hear and believe, if he repents of sin and turns from it, that he's going to be born again and live in heaven. And if he doesn't do that, then he's going to burn. And he said, well, yes, that's pretty well a summary of what we believe. I said, that sounds so unfair. Did anybody ever hit you with that? You know, you tell them, you believe in election, you believe in predestination, and they say, that's so unfair. He said, well, yes, that's what I believe. I said, well, that just sounds so unfair. What do you mean? And I gave an illustration that I lifted out of this little book I put together. And I said, now, there's a little boy out here born into a very godly home. I said, his parents take him to church twice every Sunday, most every Wednesday night. All the time he's growing up, he's in church 2 and 3 times a week. Hears more preaching than he cares anything in the world about hearing. And then there's another little boy that's born in a very wicked home. His parents never take him to church. Don't want him to go to church. Teach him to use the vilest language. He grows up. He gets into trouble. He's out with these boys. He's drinking. He's on drugs. They get in a racket. Somebody produces a gun. And before long, he's shot. And he's lying there in the gutter, bleeding to death. And I said, you tell me that in order to live in heaven, you've got to hear the gospel and believe it? I said, tell me, how is that in any sense fair to this little boy that never heard a gospel sermon in his life? I said, it looks like if God was going to make hearing the gospel and believing it to be a condition to living in heaven, since he has all the power there is, he would at least have seen to it that everybody had equal opportunity to hear the gospel. I said, it just seems so unfair. It felt a whole lot better to be on that side of the question. I've been on the other side of the question so many times. Now, I hope that doesn't sound mean to say that, but it did. It felt a whole lot better to be asking the question than it was having the other person to ask me the question. Once, several years ago, I was talking with a man. This was not long after I first discovered that salvation is by grace. We were at a service station, and conversation just happened. But anyway, I mentioned something about people in lands where the gospel is never preached. No preachers there. Can't hear the gospel. I said, what about somebody in an area like that, that never hears the gospel? And I said, you tell me they're going to burn because they never believed the gospel and they didn't hear it? He said, well, I believe that anybody in that condition will live in heaven because he didn't know any better. I thought about it for a minute and I said, well, if that's right, maybe we ought to call all of these preachers back home and let them all get to heaven because they don't know any better. Maybe we ought to close all of our churches here in America and we can get to heaven the same way if nobody knows any better. But suppose that is right. Suppose that those people who never hear will get to heaven because they don't know any better. And now we send somebody over there to preach to them. And he makes a clear presentation of the gospel. And the man says, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. I don't believe a word of it. Now he's had his chance. If you'd have left him alone, he'd have got to heaven on ignorance. Now you preach to him and you give him a chance and he's going to burn because you got down there and messed him up. He was better off before you got to meddling with his situation. Surely the legs of the lame are not equal. You know, it seems strange that there's somebody in a foreign land who's never heard the gospel. And if he heard, he might believe, repent, and be born again. But some stingy person here in America will not give his money to hire somebody to go over there. Maybe this covetous Christian in America gets car fever. I don't know what that's like. I had that a time or two back when I was younger, but I got over that. Those payments cured me of that. If anybody ever tells you that Harold Hunt used to own this car, don't walk, run. You don't want that car. If I let it go, there's no good left in it. So I can't say I know anything about what car fever is all about, but I know that there is such a thing. But anyway, suppose, you know, this man gets car fever, and he's, you know, he can just hear all kinds of rackets in the car. And there are all kinds of things that might happen to that automobile. So he goes out and he spends $5,000 on a brand new, no, I guess he'd probably spend more than that on a brand new one, wouldn't he? Spends $20,000 on a brand new automobile. Maybe for $1,000 he could have kept somebody over there on the mission field long enough to get somebody born again. But because he spent $20,000 on a car trade, 20 people are going to burn. Those people didn't know any better. He knew better. Looks to me like the wrong person burnt. If that's the case, you see, the system really doesn't make any kind of sense. No sense at all. But still, the end where we began, I still think when the man asks, the best place to start, if you're going to explain the difference between us and the rest of the religious world, begin where the Bible begins. Begin talking about the nature and attributes of God. If they can ever get straight on what God is all about, the rest of it will fall in place. And if they can't get straight on that part of it, they're not apt to see the other. I thank you, Brother Ronald.